go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go. Let's go.
Down the middle of the field. He's got through. 35,
30. Broken intercepted.
Touchdown, Zion.
Live on Giants.com. Lance and I have been assessed a 5-yard false start penalty. Thank you for rejoining us once again. You can hear us now, so that's kind of important.
Loud and clear.
But, yes, exactly. All right, so here we go, folks. A lot to talk about today. I'm not going to waste any time. Since we already lost a few minutes on the program, we got to be off the air at 1. Here we go. 1, training camp tomorrow, conditioning test, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Friday, first practice, be there. The schedule in terms of autographs was just released. Let me see if I can bring that up for you guys that want to head down to practice just so we can announce that to you guys. Here we go. On the 31st, you're going to have wide receivers. The first and the first will be linebackers, tight ends, and fullbacks. The second, quarterbacks, running backs, kickers, and punters. And then I won't give you the full schedule because those are more than a week away. But the third will be defensive linemen, the sixth offensive linemen. Then when we get back from Cincinnati, it will basically be a repeat of those guys and not necessarily that order, but it will be around in that same area. So that's the autograph session. Giants legends will be around as well. Joe Morris and Stephen Baker on Friday. Sean Lindetta, George Martin, and Rodney Hampton on Saturday. Jeff Beagle, Sean O'Hara, and Richie Cyber will be here on Sunday. So if you want to come down to practice, check it out. Now, I'm sure if everybody read the New York Post this morning, a great job by Steve Serby and Paul Schwartz getting the lot of good information from John Mara. And not a whole lot of new information on that. I guess we can first mention the stuff that John Mara said about the Giants owner, Jason Pierre-Paul. He quote-unquote had no idea when Jason Pierre-Paul will report to camp. He was very disappointed that he did not allow the Giants personnel to see him while he was down there, Lance. And really, the Giants are just waiting to see when he comes in. Mr. Mara would like him here sooner rather than later, as quickly as they can. That's the organization's stance on the whole thing. Obviously, you want him in here learning Steve Spagnuolo's defense. He's never played in that system. So all that's important. Get him here. We'll see what happens. But overall, not a whole lot of new information regarding Jason Pierre-Paul, except for the team acknowledging that, in fact, Ronnie Barnes and Jesse Armstead were not allowed to see him down there when they were down there. And really, they're waiting to see how good he's going to be and how healthy he's going to be. Jason Pierre-Paul did text John Mara. Let's see. What was the quote in the text? That he'll, this is just a little bump in the road, and he'll be back as good as ever. That's what the JPP text said to John Mara shortly after the 4th of July fireworks incident. So that's what you got on the JPP front, Lance. Not a whole lot of news in that regard.
John Mara also mentioned that he's had some communication with defensive line coach Robert Nunn since the injury and also spoke to Ronnie Barnes. So there has been some communication on both sides. But, you know, as you alluded to, John, I think the biggest takeaway from the article is the fact that, you know, they're looking, first of all, out for the well-being of JPP when they first heard about the news. But, you know, John Mara was, you know, really surprised that JPP did not open up to the Giants front office and allow them to see him one-on-one so that they could basically help him receive the best medical attention. That was the key. It wasn't so much, you know, the game of speculation, when's he going to get on the field, but here in New York, I mean, let's face it, not to diminish what's happening around the country, but you have some of the best access to doctors here, and the Giants obviously wanted them to give their own opinions to JPP to determine what would possibly be the next step.
No question about it. And again, the Giants is waiting and seeing exactly what his status will be when he gets in here. They want him here as quickly as possible, but they really don't know when he's going to arrive. So that's number one. Number two, a couple quick comments on the Eli Manning contract situation. Here we go. We would hope to have it done at some point before the season, but if not, it'll hopefully get done at some point after. I don't believe anyone's putting any deadlines on it. And this on Eli being a Giant for life. We still believe that he can play at a very high level and win a championship. He looked like a new man in the spring. His arm is very live, and he's moving around very well. His play in 2014 was significantly better, so I think the arrow is still pointing up for him.
Well, I think that they certainly want to hammer out a deal. They want to be able to secure Eli Manning's future with the squad. I don't think that's necessarily a secret. He also touched on Victor Cruz. He was asked about Victor Cruz's health. John Mara mentioned the fact that he's looked good in terms of running, but it's all in shorts. As we've been emphasizing on this program, you really can tell how effective a player is going to be once they put the padding on, John, once they play in preseason games. So that was another key takeaway. And what was also interesting, he was asked about, you know, is there going to be more pressure on the defense or the offense depending on JPP's full health? And I thought what was interesting was the fact that John Mara focused on a number of players that really can make statements this season.
And he mentioned two guys by name we've talked about a lot on this show.
He mentioned DeMontre Moore, who is certainly one key guy. He mentioned Kerry Wynn, who he thinks could build off of last season's success, and even Double O, the fact that he could perhaps step into a big-time role as the season progresses.
And he mentioned Robert Ayers as well as somebody that could step up and play a very, very big role. Talked about leadership on the defense, replacing on Charol. Someone's going to have to do that. The safety position, wait and see. Basically see how they do on the field. That's basically what we've said here as well. He reiterated that it's important to take a look and for this team to be more consistent getting to the postseason. That's something he said after the season. He reiterated that again in that article. If you're a Giants fan, I really suggest you go to the post site and read it. We'll have an article up on Giants.com about what John Mara talked about as well. Dan Salamone is putting that together. So check those out. I think it's a lot of good information for you on the Giants. And, you know, your ownership does care, and they're passionate about it. And they want this team to get better, and this is a big year, and they expect better results, and John Mara reiterated that as well. And that's basically most of the news I think we got out of those two Q&As.
Those are certainly the biggest takeaways, and the other thing that he did was he said, listen, the division got stronger this offseason, John, so that means that the Giants need to improve too. You can't necessarily expect that all of a sudden you snap your fingers and everything is going to drastically click. They realize the Cowboys have brought in some new blood, the Eagles have made changes, the Redskins have a new defensive coordinator, they have some new personnel in the defensive backfield, so clearly the Giants understand, you know, just because they improved and they made some changes, it doesn't mean that, voila, you move to the top of the division. So I think he put a lot of things in perspective in his back and forth with the New York Post. And obviously the hard work starts to go into effect tomorrow when the veterans start to report, and Friday they'll have their first practice. So time certainly is flying by. Before you know it, we'll be breaking down Giants-Cowboys for week one.
He mentioned the offensive line. Eric Flowers thinks he's going to be a very good player, but there will be some growing pains at left tackle. Mentioned Victor Cruz looking very good running on the side, but he hasn't put pads on or hit anybody yet. So that's the next step for him. And he talked about Steve Spagnuolo, not a miracle worker, but he's excited about what he can bring to the defensive side of the ball. So that's what he talked about. Now we'll take your calls for the next 15 minutes. Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus will join us from across the Atlantic Ocean at 12:30 to kind of break down some of the film work and the X's and O's and the great work they do on the New York Football Giants. 201-939-4513. Let's go to the busy phones and say what's up to Abdul in Minneapolis first. Abdul, what's going on, pal?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, John, yesterday I chatted with you on Twitter about Reese Wong's for the wheel, and I woke up this morning and I see they're bringing in Jake Long. So I put a smile on my face.
Oh, first of all, Abdul, I didn't know that was you for one. It was a pleasure talking to you on Twitter.
Yep.
And it's funny, I had a chat with somebody earlier today in the building, actually. And we're talking, and, you know, a lot of times fans tend to get upset when you don't hear things in the paper and stuff that teams are doing. And what I like to always say to fans is that there's a lot of stuff that goes on behind closed doors here. And unlike a lot of other organizations, and it varies from team to team, the Giants don't like to publicize and leak all the stuff that goes on behind closed doors. So trust me, the Giants are keeping tabs on everybody that could possibly help them. I saw that report this morning. I can't verify that it's true or anything like that. But if the Giants think somebody's out there that can make this team better, they're going to pursue it.
I hear you. Okay, yesterday I called in. I talked to Paulie about Harris. I see a lot of similarities between the Giants, this year's Giants and last year's Cowboys. That being that the defense, the Giants' defense is, I think, their weak spot, and that their offense can help by keeping them off the field, you know, and limiting limiting their plays on the field.
Yep.
And Paulie's like, you know, kind of, he didn't disagree, but he said that the only way the Giants can do this is by running the ball. And I was like, you know, I don't think that's the only way an offense could possess the ball. You know, if you look at the 80s Niners, they weren't a great rushing team, but they possessed the ball a lot of times because they used to run and pass. equally to kind of possess the ball. And I see the Giants doing that this year, that they have a chance to have a decent running game, but I think their offense is dynamic enough that it could really control the clock and, you know, and control the ball without having a power rushing game. What do you think about that? Do you think that's possible?
Well, I mean, I think you need balance on offense one way or the other. You don't certainly need to dominate with your ground attack, Abdul, as you're alluding to. I think that, you know, you can equally pass and run, but at the end of the day, you're going to have some semblance of a running game because, you know, the way this passing game works, if you just look at what was showcased last season, Abdul, they have the ability to go deep. They have the ability with a short pass to take it to the house, especially assuming that Cruz, Beckham, Randall, and Shane Vereen are all fully healthy. So, you know, I mean, I think this offense can be productive, but if you're talking about doing perhaps what the Cowboys did, which was, you know, have a lot of lengthy drives, you know, that's what stuck out to me about Dallas's offense last season. They
that's
had the capability.
About, yeah.
No, and I know exactly what you're painting. They had the ability to go for the home run, but that wasn't a big staple of their offense. And I look at the Giants' offense, they have more of the ability compared to Dallas to go for the home run.
Absolutely.
And I think they're a little bit more fast-paced, so that's why the key element is still you have to be able to run the ball with this offense if you truly want to milk the clock, as you're alluding to.
Yeah, because I'm really worried. The defense is so thin in so many spots that we're one or two players away from, you know, like Taki Brown and, you know, Jerron Holsley being our starting cornerbacks, or our safeties being two rookies and our linebackers. You know, we're not made to be, you know, kind of this grind-out defense, you know, on the field a lot, because I think, you know, we just can't absorb any injuries on defense. So I think we need to really limit our time on the field on defense. You know, I think we have great starters, but after that, the drop off is pretty steep. So,
well, but keep this in mind, Abdul.
And thanks for the call, pal.
And do appreciate you weighing in. The fact that, you know, we look at the defense, John, starters and bench guys, I think you have to go back to Spags' philosophy, and I think a lot of players are going to be rotated.
That's more front, though, than in the secondary.
Well, but at least your depth, though, right, is not just going to be, oh, well, now the fourth or the fifth defensive lineman is in. I think they're going to have a lot of even playing time in the front seven. The secondary perhaps is a different story, John. I would agree with you, but if the front seven gets a lot of work between the linebackers and the defensive linemen, I really don't think it makes a difference who starts and who's the backup,
because
everybody's going to spread the wealth.
Oh, and you hope there's going to be not much of a drop-off then from
the
first guy to the third
guy. But the more experience you get, there should be the less drop-off.
I will say this, though, from what Abdul said, and we had this conversation earlier in the year, and you can blame me. We talked about who the Giants could least afford to lose.
Well, we
in
always
the
blame you,
that
so
would
that's
hurt
not
the team. And,
surprise.
Of course, I picked Will Beatty, and 2 days later, he tore his pec. So,
beautiful
now,
timing.
I will try not to be the kiss of death again. If there are two, and I'll throw Eli Manning out because he's obviously the most important guy in the team. But beyond him, the two players now, based on everything else that's happened since then, that to me are the two most valuable players on this team. And in my opinion, more valuable than John Beeson. And that's saying something because we all know how much he helps the defense. The two guys the Giants cannot afford to lose to injury right now are Prince Mukamara and Dominique Rodgers-Camardi.
Hard to argue that. I would agree.
They
clearly, those two corners are
very hard to replace.
Look at what happened last season. Prince got hurt. DRC was banged up. You do want to make sure that both of them are on the field at the same time. I think that you have more depth in the front seven, which is what we've been talking about. You have a young safety crew, and then
those
two corners.
And that safety crew needs help.
Of course.
That's the thing.
And they need veteran help in the form of your two corners.
Exactly.
So it's hard to argue the fact that if there's two players, particularly on defense, you need your two veteran corners. Absolutely.
If you lose them, I mean, you just can't find top cornerbacks hanging around. They don't grow on trees. It's hard to find. And that would be really tough losses. All right, we got 10 more minutes before Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus joins us. Let's go to Charlie in Portland, Maine first. Chuckles?
Hey, John. Hey, Lance.
What's up, Charlie?
How are you doing? Doing all right. How about yourself?
I'm doing good. I was
well, that's the beginning of the phone call. You're doing good. How the phone call ends remains to be seen.
I'm always doing good after the phone call. You two aren't.
I can't argue with that. Good point. Yeah.
I was just going to say, I was glad to hear that Mara came out said, because they kind of painted a picture like JPP didn't talk to anybody, he didn't respond to nothing, and now we find out, right after it happened, Mara texted him, he texted right back, spoke to the defensive line coach, he's also spoke to Jerry Reese.
Correct.
That was said right after.
Yeah, that was as well.
And then he did ended up talking to Barnes just probably recently, but they made it sound like he never spoke to anybody, and that wasn't true, so that was a little disappointing to me that they didn't say that a long time ago.
Oh, but Charlie, this is why whenever everybody calls up and says, well, the newspaper said this, the media says that, a lot of times people don't have the full story, which is why I always try to caution people. And I know it's fun to run with stuff, and I get it. That's the only outlet fans have. And that's why the media is important, by the way, for fans, because that is their access to certain things. But always be careful assuming what's out there is 100% true. A lot of times it is not.
Well, that just makes JP look a little better in this situation.
Right.
A little, at least. But the other thing is, JPP would be in camp. It's up to the Giants. The Giants can say to JPP, we'll not put you on the NFI. We'll not take any of your salary away. And JPP will sign that tender, and he'll be in tomorrow and work out and get better and whatever he has to do. But what he's afraid of, they're going to put him on the NFI. He's going to lose 2, 3, 4, 5 weeks of salary. And that's why he's not doing it. So it's up to the Giants to say to him, no, we're not going to do that. We want you to get better. We're going to help you get better. We're not going to take your salary away. Your tenor is your tenor, and let's move on.
Yeah, but hold on, Charlie. Why would you want to pay a guy for 6 or 7 weeks if you know that he can't play? You get that. I mean, wouldn't you rather have You're the one that always complains about the Giants not spending money in the offseason. That could free up $6 to $7 million in salary cap space for next year. Don't you want that cap space?
No, I want JPP on the field, and I want him
playing. But he's
playing,
not going to be on the field.
But the thing is, if he was just already on the team and he was injured, we'd be paying him anyway. You know, it's the same thing.
Well, but Charlie,
not
to cut you off, I'll let you continue.
They're not looking at it like that.
No, Charlie, I was going to say, in terms of your timetable, getting back to your initial point, you mentioned that the ball is in the Giants' court. And it would help if they'd have conversations about we're not going to put you on the non-football injury list. I understand where you're coming from, but as John Mara alluded to in the New York Post article, before that even can happen, they need to physically look at JPP, talk to him, see how his hand looks, what he can do. So I would argue that JPP also needs to come face-to-face with the Giants, too.
That's a good point.
Before you start to speculate about what can they guarantee him financially and what can they guarantee him within the contractual language. John Mara has been emphasizing they want to actually physically look at him. They want to have a face-to-face conversation. That hasn't necessarily been clear as to when that will take place.
Well, the thing is like Mara said, they want him in as soon as possible. So if you want him in, then you say to him, look, you come in, we'll examine you, and we're going to promise you we're not going to take your money away.
No, but how can you make that until they look at him?
You can't make that promise until you look at him. Lance is exactly right.
That's what I'm getting at, Charlie.
Well,
Charlie, I understand you want that said.
But
wait a minute. What if the Giants go to JPP and say, Charlie, JPP, come in. We want to look at you. Once we do that, then we could start to discuss and have dialogue on what the contract should look like.
Charlie, what happens? What happens if they promise? Oh, but Charlie, hold on. What happens? I'm going to have a theoretical situation. I'm not saying there's any basis in reality to this, but what happens if the Giants say, all right, JPP, we'll sign the 10, we'll give you your money. Then JPP shows up and he misses all 16 games this year, and then they basically took $15 million, literally took $15 million and threw it into a bonfire.
Yeah, the guy in this game because he lost one finger. Come on, he's not.
So then come in and let the team look. Hey, Charlie, you're self.
Got a bad connection.
And
I think getting back to Charlie's point. Remember, there's no rule, John. JPP can walk into the facility. He doesn't have to sign the franchise tender. The minute he signs the franchise tender, that's when he's officially under contract. But they can still have conversations.
Yeah.
Nobody's denying
that. John Mara said that. They said he needs to have that
initial conversation. There we go. And then once you get that conversation out of the way, once the medical people look at the hand and they have a heart-to-heart, then you approach, okay, what could be guaranteed? What's the timetable? When can we get you back on the field? You know, do we put you on this list? Do you want to sign the tender now? Do you want to wait 3 weeks? All that stuff can happen.
And I want to read the quote, okay? This is the quote from John Mara. We obviously are going to have to see him first and determine whether or not he's capable of playing this year before we take one step further, and that's in reference to the franchise tender. It's that simple. Until you see him and know what's up, you can't make a move. And Mara also said, and I'm quoting the article again, that Ronnie Barnes, the Giants' vice president of medical services, I believe is his title, head trainer, we are Barnes has spoken to a number of doctors, but there is little data on this particular injury and how it might affect a player like Jason Pierre-Paul at defensive end. So if there's no historical precedent you can work off of as to how much time he might miss, and you haven't seen him physically yet, it's very hard to make that type of decision on where you're going to go with JPP. You had it 100% right, Lance, 100% right. Step one, get your butt in the building, let the team have a look at you, and until that happens, nobody can make an educated decision on moving forward.
That's the key. Because even with John Mara and what he told the New York Post, if the majority of the contact, John, has been via text messages, nobody physically has sat down with JPP, and this is, once again, me speculating, for, you know, 2 or 3 hours to have a heart-to-heart, okay, what is the timetable, what's the hand look like,
how do
you feel?
Based on what John Mara said, no one's seen him in person yet.
So there you go. So, I mean, that has to happen before you start to tackle the ins and outs of the contractual language. I understand why JPP hasn't signed the franchise tender. I can understand based on the logistics of that, but I think you also need to understand from the franchise's perspective, you don't want to make any guarantees until you know what you're going to get out of the player for at least this season.
And the bottom line, I will read the quote again, folks, and this is all you need to know moving forward, Jason Pierre-Paul. And I'm quoting the Giants co-owner right now, okay? We obviously are going to have to see him first and determine whether or not he's capable of playing this year before we take one step further. And that's in regards to a contract.
Simple as that.
It's that simple. That's it.
I mean, there's real no gray area in that.
No, that's as black and white as you get.
You just want a conversation. And once again, as I mentioned, JPP can come to the facility. He can meet at a place that has nothing to do with the specific Giants, at a medical facility and so forth. They can have a heart-to-heart and then obviously get a better idea of, you know, what the timetable is. Because right now it's a guessing game. It's a lot of speculations out there, John. And I think more specifics need to be laid out before obviously they take the next step.
Absolutely. 201-939-4513. That's the telephone number. We'll be joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus in just a moment here on Big Blue Kickoff Live. And you know, we've talked a lot about the Giants, and Pro Football Focus does such a good job of breaking down all the X's and O's. They look at all the game tape, and it's really great insight that you can't get anywhere else. And now we are joined by Sam Monson from Pro Football Focus, one of their senior analysts. Sam, welcome from across the Atlantic. How you doing this morning?
Thank you, Sarah. I'm good. How are you?
Oh, we're doing great in New York. And finally, we can talk about some action on the football field, Sam. I know you guys crave it. We crave it. Teams reporting today and tomorrow for training camp. Everyone else is focusing on press conferences and deflated footballs. Let's focus on what's going on with the X's and O's here. Start with Jason Pierre-Paul. Obviously, nobody knows what he's going to be able to contribute this year, Sam. How are the Giants, and will it be more difficult for the Giants, to replace his pass rush or replace his ability to stop the run? And who do you suspect on this roster will be the guys they look to do just that?
Yeah, he's an interesting guy. He's never become the truly elite pass rusher that I think everyone wanted him to be, and everyone thought he could be with the kind of physical tools he has. But he is a truly elite run stopper as a defensive end, and he is an elite player. You know, whether he's not the top-level pass rusher or not, he's a real high-level guy, and no matter what way you cut it, he's a huge loss for them. But the good news is, you know, they've drafted guys, like a guy like Odighizuwa, and have guys on the roster that can potentially at least try and fit into that void. And I think a big key is going to be whether Robert Ayers can replicate the kind of season he had a year ago. When Ayers is seen as this kind of, you know, typical first-round bust, but he's actually become a pretty good player if you look at what he's been doing when he's been on the field. He never got the big sack numbers that everyone wants out of that first-round pick, but if you look at what he did last year, he was pass-rushing extremely well. He got a lot of pressure. He just didn't get the sacks. You know, 5 sacks, but he got 12 knockdowns, 29 additional pressures, and there's a guy who only rushed the passer 250 times last year. So if he can replicate the kind of season he had last year on more snaps and more of a full-time role, that would go a long way to replacing what JPP brings.
Now, Sam, how about real quickly, JPP's work against the run? You guys graded him out as one of the better defensive ends against the run last year. How are the Giants going to go about trying to replace his strengths in that area?
Yeah, it's going to be tough. Like you say, that's what he's best at. But I think a guy like Odighizuwa is really, he's quite like a JPP clone. He's a guy that could potentially step in and do that kind of role. You know, he's obviously not going to be as good straight out of the gate as a rookie, but he's that kind of player. So I think, in theory, he's a perfect fit, a perfect guy to step in and replace that. The question is going to be, how quickly can he get up to speed and how quickly can he start playing to something like his potential?
Sam, one other guy that jumps out from a statistical standpoint last year on the defensive line is Jonathan Hankins, a two-way player similar to JPP. Very good at stopping the run, clogging the lanes, but also, I think, surprised a lot of people with his ability to get to the quarterback, finishing with 7 sacks. He's still very young. There's a lot of upside. Was this basically an indication of what you think he can do moving forward in terms of getting to the quarterback, or is this maybe a fluky stat to really focus in on?
I think there was more than the sacks. You know, while a guy like Robert Ayers, you know, he got 5 sacks but had a lot of pressure, Hankins also got a lot of pressure along with those sacks. So he also played a lot last year. He had 700 snaps is quite a healthy amount for a defensive tackle. It's among the higher figures in the NFL. So, and he graded very well the year before and limited snaps. So I think you know you're going to get an extremely good run defender. The question is going to be, can he repeat that pass rushing performance? But it was consistent all last year. It wasn't just one or two games that he blew up in. He had a couple of strong games, but all the way through the year, he was generating pressure. So I don't see anything from last year to say that he won't replicate it. I think you're looking at a guy who can play both ways, can play against the run and play against the pass and be very good at it.
Now, Sam, one defensive lineman we haven't mentioned so far is Demontre Moore. He's coming off a shoulder surgery. He's coming into his third year, the year where it's oftentimes is a make-or-break year for a defensive player. He did not have a ton of snaps his first 2 years in the league. Can Demontre Moore explode here as a pass rusher? Is his run defense holding him back that much? What's your guys' impressions of him as a player right now?
Yeah, I think it's asking a lot for him to explode in any capacity, really. His career obviously isn't that many snaps old from what we've seen, but we haven't really seen anything to shout home about. There's not been a huge amount of production either way. He did get a few sacks last year, but he rushed the passer quite a lot and didn't get that much pressure. He graded slightly above average for us. So for a guy who you're looking at as a kind of pass rushing specialist, you'd like to see a bit more. Maybe another year removed from all the injuries, we can see him take another step forward. And if he does, he could kind of progress into the realms of good or better. But it's a bit of a leap at this point to be expecting it, I think.
Talking with Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus senior analyst. One other player on defense that had a knack for getting to the quarterback, who also is very versatile, was Devon Kennard last year, Sam. And you look at the linebacking crew this year for the Giants, you know, they're hoping John Beeson stays healthy in the middle. But, you know, both of those outside jobs, I think there's some open competition. Kennard stands out to me. What was your takeaway in limited opportunities last year, and how much upside does he have heading into year two with a new defensive coordinator?
Yeah, he's the guy I think you have to be rooting for to win one of those jobs. He's a guy that definitely showed something in limited snaps. He played 338 snaps last year. But when he came in, he was getting, full-time rota worth of snaps. And that's when he was really playing well. All of his best games came in that series of games towards the end of the year where he was starting. And like you said, he did show that he'd get after the passer. He got a three-game block where he got 5 sacks. But he also got some pressure there, and he was playing the run well as well. So I think he's the guy that, with all the problems the Giants have had in that linebacking core over the past few years, you've got to be rooting for him to win a starting job and to show what he can do in a real full-time role.
Well, Sam, let's jump to safety here. And one great thing you guys have done this year is expand yourselves to college football. So you have a pretty good feel for what their two rookies might be able to do, Landon Collins and Michael Thompson. You have a couple other young guys, Nat Burhey, Cooper Taylor. They brought in a couple of veterans, Gordy and Miles as well. What do you think, when all is said and done, is going to be the best starting combination for the Giants at safety, where they can get some help against the run, but also have somebody back there that can play some single high and go sideline to sideline, take good angles, and help against the pass?
I love Landon Collins. I think he's a guy that can do it all at safety. He's extremely versatile for Alabama last year. He showed he could play as a kind of, a two high safety, play the run, play the pass. do well in coverage. He also showed that he'd come down, cover tight ends in the slot in that kind of man coverage way that, you know, the Giants have done with Antrell Roll in the past, and that a lot of teams in the NFL nowadays have to be able to do. You need to be able to match up with those tight ends one-on-one down the seam or even underneath. But he also showed the ability to be able to wheel and to be able to cover as a single high guy. It's not what he's best at. He's not Earl Thomas, but it's something that he can do. And I think to an extent he was kind of unfairly labeled as a guy who couldn't do that. He was a guy who isn't suited for that kind of deep cover draw. And I don't think that's quite true. I think he does have the ability to do it. It's just not his kind of what he's best at. So I think he's definitely one of your guys, and he's going to be the kind of linchpin there. And then I think it's just going to be a case of seeing if anyone stands out, you know, if anyone really has a good camp and wins that job. I think that's genuinely one of those jobs in the NFL that's up for grabs. It's up for a guy who has an outstanding training camp to win.
Sam, because of the two young safeties that the Giants are going to throw out this season, you could argue that they're going to have to rely heavily on two veteran corners in Prince Mukamara and DRC. Behind those two, obviously there's some question marks, whether it be in the slot or whether it be players that could fill in for DRC and Prince in the event that, obviously, the Giants suffer an injury. How would you assess the depth chart when it comes to the Giants cornerbacks heading into this season?
Yeah, I think you summed it up there. It's definitely thin. The top two guys are pretty good. You don't have any concerns there. If either one of those guys gets injured, or even when you have to go to nickel, there are way more question marks, and you're looking at a few guys there, and you're not sure if anyone's going to really be able to hold up over the course of the season, especially if they get thrown into the starting lineup with an injury. You know, Tremaine McBride is a guy that's shown some ability in the past, and he's a guy I think should win that third role. I think he's the best guy there amongst the backups. Maybe a guy like Zachary Bowman has shown stuff in the past. But I think you've got to look at McBride as the best guy there and worry about the depth. You know, in the NFL, I think when you get deeper into the season, it's the healthy teams that tend to be able to put a run together and go, you know, going deep in the playoffs.
Yeah.
The teams that suffer injuries have to go down that depth chart. They have to end up relying on some of these depth guys that just aren't able to cut it. And the Giants there, especially in the secondary, I think, are one of those teams that they're going to need to stay healthy.
We're joined by Sam Monson, senior analyst, Pro Football Focus. Sam, I want to touch on the offense now. We know about all the weapons, but in order for those weapons to be used effectively, you have to have protection up front. Will Beatty was your guy's best graded Giants offensive lineman last year. He's out for the first couple months of the year. Jeff Schwartz was your only other Giants offensive lineman that graded out positively. However, a lot of position switches this year. Pugh's moving inside. Rich Brooks moving to his natural position at center. But you're going to have a rookie now at tackle. Newhouse at right tackle. Flowers on the left side. How do you assess the Giants' offensive line and all the movement and changes we're going to see this year? Do you think they're going to be able to improve off their 2014 performance?
Yeah, it's such a situation of flux right now. We just don't know what we're going to see, you know. Will Beatty is a big loss, and, you know, for the amount of time he's going to be out, it's a really tough ask to expect Eric Flowers to come in and play left tackle and play left tackle well for as long as Beatty is sitting out, if it's, you know, into November, if it's the full season. It's a really tough ask, and I think perhaps the bigger problem is what that does to the rest of the offensive line, is that it's asking all these other pieces to start moving around as well. So a guy like Marshall Newhouse, who, you know, at best has been a struggling journeyman at tackle, and we're going to see him again at that spot. And Schwartz is a guy who I think does have really good ability, really big talent, but there's just so many injuries in his history now that we don't know if we're ever going to see that guy again, you know. I think that there's talent on that line, but we're just seeing every single person moving around and being sort of thrown into a situation with major question marks there. It's tough to see how that line can be productive early. And if it doesn't, I think we're going to see the kind of struggling Eli Manning that we've seen in the past when the offensive line has really let him down. And that's going to be the issue for the Giants, is can they get that line functioning? And if they can, how long is it going to take? You know, will the season be over and done with by the time those guys start being able to protect as well as they need them to?
Sam, you alluded to the fact, obviously, whenever you put a left tackle who's a rookie out there, there are going to be concerns, and Eric Flowers is now going to join an offensive line that I thought improved in pass protection last season, but, you know, the numbers don't lie. The running game was very up and down. You know, what is the bigger concern, you think, when you have a rookie at left tackle? Pass protection or perhaps establishing a consistent running game?
I think left tackle seems to be the spot where those tackles struggle the most. If you look in at the performance of the top first-round tackles over the past few years, they've almost universally struggled. The only guy that's actually played well at left tackle in year one is Matt Khalil for the Vikings. And, you know, he's kind of fallen off in recent years. But as a rookie, he's the one guy that was able to go out there and hold his own and do pretty well. Almost everybody else over the past half dozen years has just been a disaster. And I think part of it is because most teams will still line up that best pass rushing guy at the right side of their defense in the left tackle spot. So automatically that left tackle is facing most of the top level pass rushers. You know, there are teams out there like the Dolphins that have their best guy on the other side of the field. But by and large, those left tackles are the guys facing the murderer's row of pass rushers. So I think that's always going to be the biggest concern. And then I think you just reach a point where those guys are struggling so much over the season that everything goes away. You know, whether they are comfortable to begin with as a run blocker, they're just so spooked by the beating they're getting week in, week out, that the whole thing falls to pieces.
Joined by Sam Monson, Pro Football Focus senior analyst. Do you expect an uptick in performance real quickly on the offensive line? One more, Sam, from Richburg moving to his natural position and Pugh moving inside?
I certainly do from Richburg. I think he's, like you said, it's his natural position. He should be better at center. Pugh at guard is interesting. I thought he was okay at tackle. I'm not sure if he's going to be better at guard, especially flipping sides of the offensive line as well. It's interesting. It's such a chaotic thing that everybody is moving spots. And if nothing else, there's no continuity there, which I think on the offensive line is a fairly major deal when you're shuffling so many pieces. But I think over the long stretch, it's possibly the best situation for those two guys, and I think by the end of the year, they'll be playing better there.
Sam, one other question in terms of the offensive line, and I think the tight end is a big part of protection as well as the receiving game as we saw last season. Because, you know, when you evaluate the personnel around D-line Manning, you know what you're going to get out of Odell Beckham. Victor Cruz, we're hoping, obviously, is going to be fully healthy. The running backs have stayed consistent. They've added some versatility. Dinnell was a bright spot, a pleasant surprise last year, considering the Giants have had a great deal of turnaround at tight end year in and year out. Similar to what we were alluding to with respect to some of the defensive linemen like Jonathan Hankins, is this a sign of what's yet to come for Larry Dinnell, and what is the main area that he needs to continue to show signs of improvement upon?
Yeah, I think we saw a lot of encouraging signs from Dinnell. We saw him as a good player, as a good weapon, as a receiver, a good option in the passing attack, and he blocked pretty well as a pass protector when they asked him to do it, which wasn't that often. He only pass protected 50-odd times in the season, which, you know, for a team that's going to play 1,200 snaps, it's not a huge amount. His real main weakness last year was as a run blocker. And, you know, tight ends in today's NFL, run blocking is kind of optional. You know, there's a lot of teams have tight ends.
That's a polite way to put it.
Well, yeah, I mean, there's a lot of teams that have tight ends that are elite weapons as pass receivers. And it just doesn't matter that they don't run block. You think of Antonio Gates, Jimmy Graham, but the best tight end in the NFL is Rob Gronkowski, and Rob Gronkowski run blocks. The thing that separates the real best out there is that they're still able to be a force against in the run game. And so far, Dinnell hasn't been able to do that. So I think if he really wants to be one of the best guys out there, he's got to keep doing what he's doing as a pass protector, improve a little bit as a receiver, and then really work on that run blocking, because that's one of those spots that can really help an offense out, is, you know, irrespective of the offensive line, is getting that tight end to execute his blocks.
Sam, overall offense here, with the addition of Ben McAdoo now in his second year, Odell Beckham going into his second year, Victor Cruz looking healthy, we'll see. Reuben Randall, by our eyes and by your grades, took some big steps in his third year. How good can this passing attack be? Are we looking at potentially, again, we don't know about the offensive line, but could this be one of the top passing attacks and overall offenses in the NFL this year if that offensive line can come together?
there really is a lot to like. You know, you run down that list of weapons, there's a lot of players there, even guys like Daniel Fells as a second tight end. There's some running backs there. There are guys to like. Andre Williams has a lot of talent. You know, there's guys there that have got the ability to make big plays. And Eli Manning has shown in the past, when that offensive line has protected him, and even at times when it hasn't protected him, he's able to get it done. He's able to really exploit top-level weapons. So I think it really does come down to how quickly they can get that offensive line functioning. You know, I think early there's going to be some growing pains because there's just too many moving parts, too many guys in unfamiliar positions. But if they can get it functioning in a couple of weeks, if they can get it, you know, working well by the time October rolls around, then maybe we're going to start to see some fireworks.
Sam, final question. Just in terms of the larger environment in the NFC East, where do you see the Giants fitting in when all is said and done this year, understanding that making any type of prediction on July 29th is foolhardy?
I think it's going to be similar to last year, but that's always a bad idea when you look at the NFL. It rarely stays the same one year to the next. But they look to me to be the third best team on paper in that division, behind Philadelphia and Dallas. But like you say, who knows what things look like when the season actually rolls around.
All right, Sam, very quickly, before we say goodbye, give the fans out there, if they're interested in a Pro Football Focus, what you guys do, what products you're making available to the public this year, where they can go to find it, and what you guys do for them.
Yes, sir. We've got some changes coming, but profootballfocus.com is where you can go. We grade every single player and every single play in the NFL and college now, and college in the FBS. The changes are going to be coming out soon, but stay tuned to profootballfocus.com. You'll see everything as it happens.
Oh, that's what you call a tease in the business, ladies and gentlemen. Well, we are proud to have Pro Football Focus as a very large contributor to what we do here at the Giants. We respect what you guys do. And, Sam, we appreciate the time. We'll talk to you again down the road, all right?
Thanks so much, Sam.
Anytime. Thanks.
Appreciate it. That's Sam Monson, senior analyst at Pro Football Focus. And, Lance, it's good, I think, to get the outside perspective. But Sam doesn't cover the Giants. He analyzes and looks at the grades for all these NFL teams. So I think what I'm encouraged by hearing is that he sees a lot of the same stuff that we do, that he knows the areas you need to focus in on. And he seemed, much like we've talked about a little bit, optimistic that the Giants should be able to piece together enough guys that do different things to mitigate however long JPP might not be in the lineup.
Well, there's versatility on this roster, and that's something that we've hit on, and I think that Sam alluded to the fact that if the health factor works in favor of the Giants, John, which is obviously always a concern and always a question,
yes,
you know, that is a big positive. If guys pick up where they left off last season, I think that's another storyline to watch, such as a Jonathan Hankins, a Devon Kennard, a Kerry Wynn, just to name a few. There's certainly some players on offense that you could throw into the mix too, like a Larry Dinnell. So that is another big storyline. And probably the third factor to try to get a better read on this team is, how is the scheme going to fit the parts on defense, considering you have a new defensive coordinator, and will the offense multiply what was performed and what was put out in the last group of games last season? Those, to me, are the three factors. If at least two of the three, John, click, you're looking at a very productive team. Anything else, obviously, it's a flip of the coin.
We'll have to wait and see. All right, we got 10 minutes. We'll take your calls. John and Mattisquan wants to talk about the defense. John, thanks for holding on to that interview, buddy. What do you have going on today?
John, are you there?
Hey, Johnny.
Well, yeah, I'm here.
Okay, go ahead, pal. What's happening? What's on your mind?
Hey, Lance, John. Thanks for taking my call.
Hey, thanks for calling.
Not a problem. What you got?
Just a little thing about the defense and JPP. It just seems to me like I would equate it to going out to buy a new car. I go to a dealer today. I agree with the dealer buying car X, you know, for $40,000, and I come back tomorrow to pick it up, and in the meantime, the salesman at the dealership drove the car into a brick wall.
Or what happened, you show up and you realize that the two front tires are gone and it doesn't have a carburetor in it, and then all of a sudden the thing doesn't want to move.
Yeah, it's safe to assume that JPP didn't get better by this incident. So why wouldn't the Giants consider cutting him and taking that money and using it for another player?
Well, I don't know if they'd go that extreme. I mean, that is, using your parallel, John, you took it all the way to the opposite end of the spectrum. It is fair to say, wouldn't they weigh their options if JPP's not ready to go at the beginning of the season? But to completely cut ties with that player, that I think would be an extreme, considering at this point, you know, you're going to not want to expose him to other teams within your division so that perhaps later in the season he comes back to play against you. That's number one. And number two, there is nothing specific right now that says he won't be able to play this season.
And John, you're on the other side of the line as Charlie, the same way you can't just, write him a blank check right now without seeing him. At the same time, until you see him, you can't, throw him to the curb either. So you got to get in here. He has to get in here. The team has to look at him. And once they have the information necessary to make that decision, they'll make the decision.
I understand what you're saying, but to me, it's a business decision for the Giants. The Giants didn't do this to JPP. He did it to himself.
That's true.
And, and it's really not fair to the Giants organization. And I know the Giants organization is a very class organization. They always try to do the right thing by people, which is fantastic. But, this is kind of a ridiculous situation.
Well, it's a unique situation. I mean, that's what it really is. It's not as if every offseason you deal with this type of an injury. This is uncharted territory. And, I mean, the fact that it happened to two players, let's not forget, really puts things in perspective here.
And, John, I'll say this, too. I mean, if you told me that you could, choose not to sign JPP and then find a player of his caliber you can pay $14 million to replace him, that's fine. Maybe we could have a different conversation then. But there's nobody of Jason Pierre-Paul's caliber sitting out there on the street waiting for a contract right now. Could you use that money elsewhere, to other guys that maybe become free agents? Sure, you can consider that. But you're still not replacing Jason Pierre-Paul.
I agree with what you're saying. But my point is you've got five really good, in my opinion, really good defensive ends on the team already, and you could put Colin Jenkins in there, too, as a backup. And you can go get a guy that's 75 or 80% of JPP and not have to deal with all the nonsense and the distractions and then continue the immaturity of a guy like JPP.
Well, I hear you, Johnny. Thanks for the call, bud.
It's a good point, and certainly you do want everybody ready to go at the start of the season. And I think that the other thing that can't be overlooked about this situation, this is also something John Mara brought up in the Post article, was the fact that, let's put the health aside here for a second, John. JPP missed OTAs in minicamp.
Yeah.
It's a new defense.
And he's never played in Spagnuolo's defense.
The mindset, just the terminology, he needs to get that under his wings before you even all of a sudden throw him out there. So that's another important factor.
And what did every player that we talked to this offseason, Lance, when you ask them about learning the new defense, what's the first thing they say? It's like learning a new language. So whenever JPP comes in here, and I'll use this analogy, everyone here is going to be speaking fluent Chinese. He's going to come and speak in English, and he's going to have to learn this defense pretty quick.
Yeah.
That's hard. He's got to learn the Chinese first. Then he's got to get on the field and execute it. So makes it a little bit tougher.
And that's something that I think the Giants, that's more of a reason why they want to get him back here. It's so at least he could have some conversations with Spags about how he fits into the defense and he understands the schemes.
And one other thing that he said, find someone 70, 80% as good as JPP. Well, guess what? A 70, 80% of a JPP guy isn't sitting out there on the streets right now.
Correct.
You're looking at a 30% of JPP guy you might be able to bring in. Maybe.
And there's still a drop-off. No matter the percentage you throw out there, John, you're not finding a duplicate of JPP. And, what happens if he can come back and by the time the season progresses, he's playing at a very high level? Your team then gets stronger as the season goes, John. And we saw that.
Yeah.
Let's go back to 2011. O.C. Umanyora, he comes back late in the season. What does that do for the defense? So you never know when a player can all of a sudden click, he can get fully healthy, how that can elevate the team's plan. And JPP, and once again, there is no timetable. It's all speculation. But, let's go into the hypothetical premise that he does miss a game or two. If he then comes back, to me, he could be the type of player that gradually improves as the season goes, John. And that could help really bring this defense to a new level.
Yeah, and how quickly is the defense going to come together? I mean, remember the last time Steve Spagnuolo took over the Giants' defense, the first three games were a real struggle, and the third game, the first half, was a struggle. So how quickly does this group put it all together? Especially if JPP's not there, one of your best defensive players. So who knows? And again, we're speculating. Who knows when he's going to be back and when he's going to be able to play? Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. What? Let me try that again. Shakes in Baltimore, Maryland. Shakes, how are you today?
Talking about speaking a different language. And There we go. Shakes is very quick to his point.
Well, I think he
apparently
was upset
he got
that,
tired.
That I mispronounced Maryland.
Yeah, you see, this is, he's a very sensitive guy. You got to be very careful in terms of how you address him. You should know better.
As soon as he calls back, Dave, throw him up, we'll put him up. One other thing I thought that probably scares Giant fans a little bit, and me and you have made this point a number of times before, going over some of the Pro Football Focus grading of rookie offensive tackles that especially had to play left tackle in their first year in the past. And again, it could be different with Eric Flowers. Everybody's unique. But history says that rookies stepping into left tackle can be a struggle in year one, and there's going to be ups and downs.
Well, and history also shows, John, that it's very rare that a rookie even steps into left tackle week one.
Even guys that played left tackle in college often start off on the right side of the post.
And then they move to the left side because of an injury or something else that you were alluding to. So, you know, he's really entering uncharted territory. The positive is Eric Flowers has been working at left tackle, OTAs,
yep.
mini camp. He'll have the entire training camp session. By the time week one comes, John,
he's a grizzled veteran.
There we go. He'll be a seasoned veteran.
Yeah, we'll stick with that.
He'll have a lot of experience.
Yes.
That's the point. We don't know how effective, what exactly he's going to do. But the point is, compared to other left tackles who are rookies, John, that have been thrown into that fire, I think Eric Flowers has had a comfort period, which most rookies can't say they've been in that type of position.
And I'll tell you what, playing those scrimmage practices in Cincinnati will help him. Going up against another defensive end.
Geno Atkins, who they have.
Very good defensive lineman in Cincinnati, absolutely. That'll be helpful for him. Jacksonville has some guys that can come off the edges. Too bad he couldn't go up against Dante Fowler in that game because of that injury. But he's out. He got put on IR for the year.
Yes, he did.
Right?
Yeah.
So he's out for the season. And then the Jets, they have very talented defensive linemen as well that he's going to go up to against in that game. And the Patriots usually don't play many people in that final preseason game. But those are some three pretty good opponents that he's going to have a chance to get ready against. All right, we got a couple minutes to go before we say goodbye. Shakes is back with us. Hopefully he doesn't hang up on us this time. What's up, buddy?
Sorry, my phone dropped, but thanks for taking my call.
No problem. Thanks for calling in, pal.
I got a question, and then I want y'all to put something on the board for me.
Oh, okay. Dave, I need a pen and a sheet of paper, all right? Go ahead, Chase.
All right. Well, which one did I start with, the question or the
Start with the question.
You
want to end on a bold prediction.
Right,
I know you.
All right.
Yeah.
All right, my question for y'all is, and I brought this up on a show yesterday, was topic, and I wanted to know, who do y'all think will replace JPP as far as snaps goes? Like, majority of the snaps, who do y'all think will replace him?
Honestly, Shakes, I don't think you can pick one guy. I think...
And I know that, and I'm sorry to cut you off.
Okay.
I know that. I know it's going to be a rotation. It's going to be a good rotation, too. I think we are deep in that rotation. But I want to know who's the guy that's going to get majority of those snaps.
All right, well, here's the thing. Last year, Jason Pierre-Paul played 981 snaps, all right? So he played around, if you do the math real quick, 98 divided by 16, that's around 70 or so, 60 to 70 snaps per game for JPP last year. I think most of those snaps will, I mean, do you count Robert Ayers in that, or do you think Robert Ayers is a starter even with JPP there?
Yeah, I believe that's the general consensus, is that he's the starter on the other side.
Okay, so you know what? You know what name I'm going to give you? And I know a lot of people are not going to like me giving this name. You know who I think is going to get probably 40% of those snaps? George Selvey. Because I think he's going to be a guy that's going to be in there to stop the run on first or second down. Now, I don't think Selvey's going to be on the field much to rush the passer in passing spots. I think you'll see Kerry Wynn. I think you'll see a little bit of Demontre Moore. But I bet you on first down and second down, especially against Dallas in week one and some of the teams that like to run the ball, I think George Selvey's going to be your guy.
It's a good name. It's a good name. My boy Black Friday, shout out to my man Black Friday from Georgia. But yeah, he said Selvey as well. My statement for y'all is, and
how about
Lance,
you, Lance?
Sorry,
what do you think?
Well, I've been saying George Selvey.
I
don't mean to cut
Selvey
you off,
too?
Shakes. Hold off on that. I would agree with you. I've been saying Selvey is probably a sleeper. He's a forgotten name,
and
nobody even brings him up anymore.
And I think Kerry Wynn will have more snaps than Demontre Moore. How about that?
I think if you factor in the fact that I'll even go sides, I could see Selvey on the left and Ayers on the right. I could see perhaps.
But then
sometimes
I could see in passer situations Moore coming in on the right side and then moving Ayers back over to the left side.
That's fair.
But I think Kerry Wynn can play both left or right.
I would agree with you.
Which is why I think, Shakes, that in the end, Wynn might get more snaps than Moore, because I think Wynn is more versatile to play both the run and the pass.
Interesting. Appreciate y'all answers. All right, my statement.
Yes. All right, here we go.
Statement for y'all.
I'm writing
it on
down.
The board.
This is not even in pen, by the way. This is a Sharpie.
Yeah.
This is how special we think of you. So just
put
remember that.
Put it on the board.
Yep. Yes.
Put it on the board. Eric Flowers will be a Pro Bowl this season.
Wow. You know what? You sold out for him even before the draft happened. I like you sticking with your guy, Shakes. That's
look
guts. That is being very loyal, and I like that.
Pro Bowl. Write it down.
All right.
We'll be...
All right. Thanks for taking my call, y'all.
Eric Flowers Pro Bowl. All right, Shakes.
Thanks, Shakes.
We will speak. Have a good one.
Well, I'll tell you what. If Eric Flowers makes the Pro Bowl this year, the Giants will be very good on offense.
Going out on a limb there. Yeah.
That's a bold prediction. That's how you close a darn show.
Well, they would certainly take that and run with it. Absolutely. No complaints from that perspective if Eric Flowers does get Pro Bowl consideration this season.
All right, so you're in on Friday, right, this week with Tatino?
Yes.
Are you in tomorrow?
No.
Okay. So we got Tatino and Anita tomorrow, and then we got you and Tatino on Friday.
Correct. That is the schedule.
And then, by the way, I should mention that Paul and I will be hosting over the weekend. We'll have shows on Saturday and Sunday because practice begins over the weekend. And starting on Friday, all our shows will be starting at 12:30 instead of 12. So 12:30 to 1:30 starting on Friday, and that's because to accommodate practice, media availability, things of that nature. So take note of that time change. And tomorrow, Players Report, Friday Players Report, it'll be all calls. All calls, all you. Let's get ready. Let's get going. Let's get ready for some football. Thanks to Sam Monson for Pro Football Focus for joining us. Lance Meadow, John Schmelk. We'll see you tomorrow. Welcome back to Big Ten Kickoff Live on Giants.com. Lance and I have been assessed a 5-yard false start penalty. Thank you for rejoining us once again. You can hear us now, so that's kind of important.
Loud and clear.
But, yes, exactly. All right, so here we go, folks. A lot to talk about today. I'm not going to waste any time. Since we already lost a few minutes on the program, we got to be off the air at 1. Here we go. 1, training camp tomorrow, conditioning test, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Friday, first practice, be there. The schedule in terms of autographs was just released. Let me see if I can bring that up for you guys that want to head down to practice just so we can announce that to you guys. Here we go. On the 31st, you're going to have wide receivers. The first and the first will be linebackers, tight ends, and fullbacks. The second, quarterbacks, running backs, kickers, and punters. And then I won't give you the full schedule because those are more than a week away. But the third will be defensive linemen, the sixth offensive lineman. Then when we get back from Cincinnati, it will basically be a repeat of those guys and not necessarily that order, but it will be around in that same area. So that's the autograph session. Giants legends will be around as well. Joe Morris and Stephen Baker on Friday. Sean Lindetta, George Martin, and Rodney Hampton on Saturday. Jeff Beagle, Sean O'Hara, and Richie Cyber will be here on Sunday. So if you want to come down to practice, check it out. Now, I'm sure if everybody read the New York Post this morning, a great job by Steve Serby and Paul Schwartz getting a lot of good information from John Mara, and not a whole lot of new information on that. I guess we can first mention the stuff that John Mara said about the Giants owner, Jason Pierre-Paul. He quote-unquote had no idea when Jason Pierre-Paul will report to camp. He was very disappointed that he did not allow the Giants personnel to see him while he was down there, Lance. And really, the Giants are just waiting to see when he comes in. Mr. Mara would like him here sooner rather than later, as quickly as they can. That's the organization's stance on the whole thing. Obviously, you want him in here learning Steve Spagnuolo's defense. He's never played in that system. So all that's important. Get him here. We'll see what happens. But overall, not a whole lot of new information regarding Jason Pierre-Paul, except for the team acknowledging that, in fact, Ronnie Barnes and Jesse Armstead were not allowed to see him down there when they were down there. And really, they're waiting to see how good he's going to be and how healthy he's going to be. Jason Pierre-Paul did text John Mara. Let's see. What was the quote in the text? That this is just a little bump in the road, and he'll be back as good as ever. That's what the JPP text said to John Mara shortly after the 4th of July fireworks incident. So that's what you got on the JPP front, Lance. Not a whole lot of news in that regard.
John Mara also mentioned that he's had some communication with defensive line coach Robert Nunn since the injury and also spoke to Ronnie Barnes. So there has been some communication on both sides. But, you know, as you alluded to, John, I think the biggest takeaway from the article is the fact that, you know, they're looking, first of all, all out for the well-being of JPP when they first heard about the news. But, you know, John Mara was, you know, really surprised that JPP did not open up to the Giants front office and allow them to see him one-on-one so that they could basically help him receive the best medical attention. That was the key. It wasn't so much, you know, the game of speculation, when's he going to get on the field, but here in New York, I mean, let's face it, not to diminish what's happening around the country, but you have some of the best access to doctors here, and the Giants obviously wanted them to give their own opinions to JPP to determine what would possibly be the next step.
No question about it. And again, the Giants is waiting and seeing exactly what his status will be when he gets in here. They want him here as quickly as possible, but they really don't know when he's going to arrive. So that's number one. Number two, a couple quick comments on the Eli Manning contract situation. Here we go. We would hope to have it done at some point before the season, but if not, it'll hopefully get done at some point after. I don't believe anyone's putting any deadlines on it. And this on Eli being a Giant for life. We still believe that he can play at a very high level and win a championship. He looked like a new man in the spring. His arm is very live, and he's moving around very well. His play in 2014 was significantly better, so I think the arrow is still pointing up for him.
Well, I think that they certainly want to hammer out a deal. They want to be able to...
Oh, here we go, here we go. Here we go. Come on, man. We need the work. Let's go, let's go.
Got the field. He's got through. 35, 30.